Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Mitch Jeter lines it up. He's ready. The orange bull is on Mitch Jeter's leg. Good snap. Good hold. Kick on its way. And the kick is good!
Yes!
Mitch Jeter, with 7 seconds left, gives the Irish a lead. 27-24. Notre Dame is on the precipice.
Notre Dame Radio Network, although you probably could have guessed that. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. It ended up being a thrilling finish. Notre Dame moves on to the national championship game. The first time in 12 years, they're going to play for the title, Perloff, and we're going to give Notre Dame a lot of credit today and a lot of flowers, but I got to be honest, I feel like Penn State choked this
it,
one
Maggie.
Away. I feel like
don't do it.
I'm sorry, and I'm not trying to pile on just Drew Aller. He's a young man. We don't like to do that with college players. It's not just him. I didn't love the game plan. I think the flaws for Penn State were exposed. You know, you had a 10-0 lead. You allowed Notre Dame to score 17 unanswered points, including 3 of those points coming on a very nice-looking drive for the backup quarterback. Then Penn State gets the lead back, but they weren't able to hold it. A 54-yard touchdown catch to Greathouse, and then the Aller interception set up the field goal that
Wait,
you just heard.
What do you mean you didn't like the game plan? Like, in what set, like, Colton Nickey was dominating 65% of the game, the Penn State offensive coordinator. Like, I don't think they had the talent. Like, what do you mean? What are you supposed to game plan when you don't have a quarterback who can throw to wide receivers?
Well, like, okay, but see, that's the thing, right? What did Notre Dame do in a lot of ways? Like, besides that 54-yard touchdown, which was basically two guys fell, and it left just all this wide open space for Greathouse. But you're telling me after you lost to Ohio State when you didn't complete a pass to a wide receiver that you are going to go into this game against Notre Dame and you're going to be able to replicate and you're going to be able to win this game, rather, without throwing a pass to a wide receiver.
Well, they did throw passes.
Didn't complete screen passes, anything. I mean, trying to get more. You're not going to do this air it out, air raid. This is not, may he rest in peace, Mike Leach. I get that. But to get absolutely nothing from your wide receivers also felt like a mistake here. And something that almost felt like a fatal flaw. Then we can go down to little tiny decisions, like should James Franklin have called a timeout after they got the first down with 33 seconds right before Aller threw the interception? Stuff like that maybe didn't do them any favors.
I disagree on the game plan thing, though. I think Penn State came out with a better game plan than Notre Dame, for sure.
Yeah, they
got
the lead.
Penn State watched the tape last week and said Notre Dame has one thing. They run the ball with Riley Leonard.
Yep.
And Penn State absolutely just 10 guys were watching Riley Leonard and stuffed him left and right. And they should have ran away with that game in the first half. And it was an inability to recover a fumble that was right in their hands. It was an inability to catch a screen pass for a touchdown or maybe a bad throw, whatever. They came out with the better game plan, for sure. I mean, they definitely should have won the game in the first half. Should have been up by a lot more. And then they knocked out Riley Leonard. What happened in the second half, like, you're right, there was just a few fluke plays, and then they just didn't have the offensive talent. I think Colton Nickey did a fine job. Like, they were the craftier offense by far. Like, you didn't really know where that run game was going. So
Singleton scored 3 touchdowns. Yeah, no, I understand.
It wasn't like a coaching strategy thing.
I guess when
the team got tight.
I guess when I say game plan, I mean, how do you expect to win that game if you don't complete a pass to a wide receiver?
Well, is that a game? I mean, maybe you just don't
they
have
good. They went away from him.
Well, you don't. Okay.
You know, they tried early, and there was that would have been a walk-in touchdown pass that was, like, slightly behind,
well,
I guess.
Well, that's a running back, but yeah.
A running back, yeah, that's true. But it was just like, they went to them, I felt like, a little bit early, then completely went away from them. And the thing is Ty Warren is awesome, but when 3 guys are on him, that's impossible.
Well, Drew Aller threw an early pass. It was, like, 8 yards past where it was supposed to go.
He was bad in the first half. 5 for 13 in the first half.
Yeah,
he ended up 12 for 23 with 135 yards. And again, 0 passes connected with wide receivers.
Yeah, you credit Notre Dame's defense, too. Yeah. I don't know. I think to sit back, it just that was one of those games where It just came down to little plays, and there was thin margins. And we knew that because we've watched Penn State and Notre Dame. You and I knew exactly how this game was going to play out. It was going to be a slugfest. Notre Dame has no offense whatsoever. They have a run game. They have no passing game. They had one lucky play. So this was going to be played in a phone booth, as it were. And just I think that I don't even exactly know how they did it, but Notre Dame just a little bit more resilient in the end.
So I'm putting this in the category of another James Franklin. Obviously, it's a loss. He's now lost 13 in a row against top 10 teams. And, excuse me, against top 5 teams. 4-20 against top 10 teams. The numbers are terrible. Now, a lot of these are by one score. So let's be, I guess it's not a lot of blowouts, a silver lining. Okay. But does this go in the category as a James Franklin choke? Manny's despondent today. And I'm sorry, Manny, that I'm going to keep asking you for highlights from Notre Dame and lowlights from Penn State and all that. But doesn't this go in the category of another James Franklin choke? I mean, you had the lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I guess technically it does. It feels a little different than the Ohio State losses, right? Just the way the game played. Like Ohio State, they never got anything going, and never, even though they would lose 20-13 pretty much every time, it seems like every time Ohio State and Penn State play, it's the same score. I think this game was a little bit different. It was a little more, I hate to say it, excruciating. I think James Franklin did a better job than I've seen him do before. Like, I don't think that he got wildly outcoached by any means.
No, but there was a couple things that actually broke Penn State's way, which was a couple, interceptions that got called back because of, I thought the second pass interference, I didn't love it. The first one, he did kind of grab the jersey. Okay, that's PI, fine. The one in the end zone, though, where Drew Lauer looks to throw the pick, and it looked to be picked off. It was intended for Ty Warren. I don't love those calls, Perloff, because the throw was 5 yards short. So, of course, Warren's reaching back for it through the defender. That, to me, is not that's not defensive pass interference.
But the defender has got to turn his head just a little bit.
They've got to turn the head.
Like, what kind of DB, like, in that situation in the end zone, luckily, it wasn't in the NFL and it wasn't at the one-yard line, you got to at least pretend to turn your head. He didn't even try. He just ran right into him and never even moved an inch towards the field.
I know,
and
but
Matt
again,
Austin and I are in lockstep, officiating expert.
You usually don't like those officiating TV guys, but
But that was also a pretty weak play by that defensive backer. You have to have some awareness of what's going on.
Let's hear from the coaches, the players, and let's hear a little from James Franklin, who says the end of the first half, when backup quarterback Steven Jelly led the Irish on a field goal drive, and the start of the second half, that's what really hurt the team.
We weren't effective enough on third down, and then the middle eight. That field goal right before the half was big. We almost had a chance to have a fumble recovery right there off a strip sack. And then to open the second half with them going down and scoring a touchdown and us going three and out. Those things, that was significant in the game.
It's funny, though, because, the fourth quarter was such a frenzy of scoring, RIP to the under.
That was a tough beat.
Bad beat for your girl, but what are you going to do?
I cannot believe that game found a way to get over, because it felt like the first half they weren't even going to get to double digits. Well, it was so slow.
There were 31 points scored in the fourth quarter alone. So in some ways, I kind of disagree a little bit with James Franklin that's where the game was lost. Well, Penn State didn't score in the third quarter. I get that, but you scored two touchdowns in the fourth.
Well, he did say, to his credit, I think it was before halftime, interview, he said the middle eight, he's used the same term, but this is such a key part. Reminds me a little bit of Tom Brady's Patriots. They always dominate the last 2 minutes of the second quarter and the first 2 minutes of the third quarter, and they got the ball back. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. That's when the game was won, on that first drive in the second half, where Notre Dame just somehow, whatever Notre Dame was doing wrong in the first half, they got it all right in the second half. They were much more physical.
Yeah, I didn't see it that way. I think the game was won when Drew Aller threw a bad interception. Like, this one did kind of feel like it was hanging in the balance all the way until the end. No, Notre Dame played better in the second half.
But don't you think the first drive of the second half was a huge, like, oh, all of a sudden this game completely changed? I thought it was a total sea change when Riley Leonard came back in the game.
Yeah.
After going out with a concussion. Yeah, I thought that was the key drive of the whole game.
Well, you and James Franklin are in lockstep there. Here's more from Franklin. Drew Aller obviously throws the bad interception. It sets up Notre Dame for the game-winning field goal, as we played for you at the top of the hour. He said Aller was hurting, but he knows he'll bounce back.
He'll handle it.
great. He'll be hurting tonight, and he'll be hurting tomorrow, and he'll hurt a little bit less the next day, and so on and so forth. But he's a committed guy that's going to do it the right way.
Yeah, and he's definitely coming back now. If there was any thought that maybe he would go to the NFL, I think the way that game ended, not exactly the note you want to leave college on. And if he has a better season next year, which I'm sure he's capable of, because the dude's got a big arm and everything, they need better receivers for him. Maybe he raises the draft stock. Let's hear from Aller. He's detailing the interception and what he was trying to do, throwing late and over the middle.
I was going through my progression, got to the backside, and honestly, I was just trying to dirt it at his feet, but I mean, I should have just thrown it away when I felt the first two progressions not open just because of the situation we were in. But I was just trying to dirt it at Amari's feet, but just didn't execute what I was trying to do.
Yeah, that's funny. That's not what it looked like at all. It looked like he was being smothered. He threw the ball up basically blind, and Christian Gray of Notre Dame made an all-time great play to pick it off.
He definitely threw off his back foot. He was not.
Yeah.
His body wasn't moving in the right direction. They didn't get a ton of pressure on him, so he wasn't used to. I think he got a little overconfident. It was great interception. Yeah, it was a bad play. I mean, he's had a really bad playoff, Drew Aller. I hate to say it. You know, he reminded me of another Penn State quarterback, and man, he's probably familiar with this man's work. I would say like the second half of Christian Hackenberg's career at Penn State. Hmm. Just a guy who started out
Manny.
Hope. Yeah, that was a shot at Manny.
Oh, wow.
But Drew Aller, you know, number one overall recruit, like is supposed to be a huge stud. He was just like, he is missing passes. I mean, the fact that I almost give James Franklin credit for getting that close to winning with that guy. He wasn't good in all three playoff games. The first one was freezing cold. So that might be an exception, but there's just something missing there. Like
I think it's good receivers.
Maybe. But I don't know. He looked really inaccurate in the first half. Again, I thought Penn State should have run away with it. Kind of like Texas against Arizona State. Like Texas should have been up by four touchdowns against Arizona State. You let these tough-minded teams hang around, Maggie. You have a problem.
855-212-4227. All right, you watched that game last night. It was exciting. Where are you placing your thoughts? Is it more about a Penn State choke job? Was it more about, hey, Notre Dame found a way to survive and win? And can Notre Dame win the whole thing? Early look ahead from DraftKings. If Notre Dame faces Ohio State, they'd be at an 8.5-point underdog. If they face Texas, they'll be a 2.5-point underdog.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, I feel like that's going to go up. You don't know Notre Dame's health for the game right now, so that's a big issue, too.
We got 10 days, so for Jeremiah Love, I'm sure needs surgery.
Well, yeah,
the fact that he's hurdling guys with that gigantic knee brace on is really something. And being gritty at the goal line. I thought that the two fill-ins at first did really well, started to wear down a little bit as the game went on.
Right, but you have JTT coming at you. And another question. If Abdul-Carter had two arms...
How about this guy?
If he had two arms, would that have made a difference? Like,
I mean, if he had two arms, he would have recovered that fumble.
I know.
From the backup quarterback.
Yeah, which may have changed the entire game.
He was unbelievable.
So good. He was so good. You know, as far as that part of the Penn State game plan, and Perloff, I think you texted this to the group chat last night, which was why didn't the spot having the spy on Riley Leonard?
And
I didn't
say that, no, but I thought that.
Was it you, BJ?
No, he said that, and he said that last week. Yeah, he's been saying that every time Notre Dame plays. He just didn't say it last night for some reason.
We're in the future now, where Perloff all of his thoughts just implant directly in my brain. We don't even need a group text.
You should definitely spy Josh Allen. By the way, that's another thing. Like,
this playoff,
I think the NFL has a sea change coming where they're going to start spying these quarterbacks more. Because, anyway, you're right. You should have spied Riley Leonard. And they did.
Yeah.
They were all over him. Riley Leonard got destroyed on his first five runs. Just blown up.
Carter was one. Carter, yeah. Singleton, in a loss. These guys were so good. And Ty Warren didn't get like a crazy amount of yards, 60-something yards or whatever. But you can see the talent there. No, I mean.
Can we do two player comps, by the way?
Sure.
I said that Ty Warren is Chris Cooley, BC Bryant lines up everywhere. Mm. But Jim Nagy, our friend who runs the Senior Bowl, is doing a lot of GM, said he's a twin with Dallas Clark, the former Colts. He's like, they are the same exact player.
Yeah.
And that's like a Hall of Fame lover tight end. And then Abdul Carter, sorry, I know you guys are follow Penn State closely. Like, isn't he Micah Parsons 2.0? Undersized, ridiculously strong, ridiculously fast. do everything.
Wearing the number 11?
Yeah, I mean, he's not big, but he's unstoppable. Yeah. A wasted effort. He deserved to win that game. I mean, he gave it all.
The fact that he is playing with one arm is, well, like, he had one arm is, like, severely injured. It's all bandaged up and stuff like that.
And he dominated.
And he was great. Yeah. He was great. He probably needs surgery, too, and I was wondering about that for his draft situation, but you take him anyway.
And it's funny, we talked a lot in the last game about Notre Dame's dominant defenders. I don't really remember saying Cross's name or a lot of, like, it wasn't like the Notre Dame defenders, except for Christian Gray with the interception, really dominated. Like, it was Penn State's pass rush. Again, you asked me, like, is it a Penn State choke job or is it Notre Dame resilience? Like, I still am not quite sure how Notre Dame won that game, Maggie. I felt like that was Penn State's game to have.
I'll tell you how they won the game. This is what you need to know.
Maybe you should tease us because you seem like you have it figured out.
Oh, I have it. I'm sorry if I buried this. I shouldn't have buried the lead. I was too busy piling on James Franklin and Penn State. I know exactly how Notre Dame won this game.
Does this involve a leprechaun?
Maybe. No. I'll tell you exactly how. It's one number.
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. I'll tell you exactly how Notre Dame won this game. It comes down to one number alone. And it's not the 41-yard field goal that Jeter kicked. Not that. An actual number that told the story of the game.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Yeah, we'll get to that right after this.
All right, Maggie. I came in happy today because I followed your lead. And I did the Drew Aller under passing yards on Prize Picks. When you said that yesterday's show, I was like, there's no way that dude's getting to 185. Prize Picks, best way to watch football. You can win cash while watching the NFL playoffs, college football, basketball, all sorts of sports. Over 10 million members, billions of dollars in award winnings. So simple to use. You pick two or more players across any sport, pick more or less on their projection, and you could win up to 1,000 times your money.
I dare you. I defy you. Find a place where you can have this type of fun tonight. Would you like Jeremiah Smith? How about, I'm going to go less than 87.5 receiving yards because I think they're going to be all over him. Texas has to stop him. With a Carl Anthony Towns, 40.5 points, rebounds, and assists. That's for you, Manny.
I got to tell you.
Cheer up.
The points, rebounds, and assists might be my favorite.
It's so good. I love it. We love Prize Picks. It's America's number one daily fantasy sports app. It's available in more than 40 states, including our friends in California and Texas. All you got to do is download the Prize Picks app today. Use the code M&P and get a $50 credit instantly when you play $5. That's code M&P on Prize Picks. You get a $50 credit instantly when you play just $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details.
Mand P.
Oh, Manny, did you really think you were winning that game? I mean, it is Penn State and James Franklin after all, Manny. I take that as a yes.
I kind of blame Manny. You were sending some group texts last night, welcome back to Maggie and Perloff show, that were a little overconfident. You kind of put the kibosh on your Nittany Lions. You were like, the exact text was, Manny, who's a Penn State fan, texted us, I'm making indescribable noises. And I'm like, I hope you're watching the game. That was my first thought.
He didn't say what he was doing.
Very lots of incoherent noises and then a lot of sadness afterwards.
Oh, Manny. You know what? Here's the thing. 12-team playoff, you're going to be back. I just don't know if James Franklin can ever win this big game. I think it's a fair question. How much more evidence do you need?
Well, I don't think, and I'm curious what the caller's saying. I don't think this Penn State team was that good. I actually don't even think Notre Dame is that good. I don't think.
There was not a dominant college football team. Ohio State looks like one now.
I don't think either of these teams is the second best team in college football. I think Oregon would beat both of them. I mean, I don't think that's a hot take either.
I teased before the break. Perloff's wondering, how did Notre Dame win this game? I have a stat for you that's going to tell you exactly how. But first, Josh in Pennsylvania is on the line. Good morning, Josh. How you feeling?
A little depressed, Maggie. But I got two things about that game.
Sure.
I don't put maybe only 10% of the blame on Franklin. I know it's rough to put blame on kids, and I can call him a kid, and I'm in my mid-30s. But that Drew throw, like 2 yards behind Singleton at the 2-yard line, he had a wide open throw, and that would have changed the complete momentum. And then the second thing is, I don't know if you caught the announcers mention it last night, but how was it allowed that the same reffing crew that reffed the Notre Dame-Georgia game was allowed to ref this game?
Josh, I was surprised by that, too. I did notice it. I was surprised by it.
Well, yeah, but Notre Dame didn't get... I think Notre Dame got worse calls than Penn State.
Yeah, the two interceptions that got wiped out.
They were holding Carter all night, Pearl, like wrapping around the neck all night.
Oh, I don't know. That Penn State guys were holding on those edge runs.
Yeah,
Penn State
was holding on both sides of the ball. Yeah, like, I don't want to get into a ref show, but the refereeing crew was terrible, in my opinion, on both sides.
Yeah. I didn't think it was like overwhelmingly pro Notre Dame. In fact, I thought, as Maggie started the show, like the PI was a tough call.
Oh, 1,000%. I agree. But I just don't know how that's allowable. We don't even allow that in the NFL for them to ref the same team, I think, more than twice in a season, let alone back-to-back weeks.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I feel like that. Did you tell me? No, the officiating crew can do twice in a season. There's no way.
No,
like,
I think two might be the max, though. I don't know if that's also continues in the playoffs, because for the NFL, and Josh, thanks for the call, and you know, everyone heads up there in Pennsylvania, you're going to be back in this playoff, no doubt about that. But they do the thing, the all-star crews, they call them in the NFL playoffs, which has the complete opposite effect. So guys have never worked with each other before, and I find you end up getting worse calls at times in the postseason, even than in the regular season. Brad is in Alabama, has a thought on last night's game. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
We're great. Well, Manny could be better.
Well, yeah, Manny, you know, James Franklin, he's 4-15 against good teams, Manny. You know, I mean, what do? You just go to 12 games and not win? But the question I have is, okay, next year, when Arch Manning's starting quarterback at University of Texas, right, and he's going to come out for the draft because it's the end of his junior year, and he looks at the team that's about to draft him, it's the New Orleans Saints, and he's like, ooh, Pawpaw says I don't want to go there like Uncle Eli. I'm coming back to Texas. What is NIL going to do to these draft boards eventually?
Well, Brad,
I mean, his dad lives in New Orleans. He would take New Orleans. That's a bad example.
He's from New Orleans.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the team's terrible, Perloff, and the owner's not good.
Yeah. I understand your point. You're saying, will NIL, if you get a $25 million NIL deal, will that keep kids out of the NFL? I think the answer is yes.
Absolutely. Brad, thanks for the call and the thought. Listen, his uncle Peyton Manning did this without NIL. He didn't want to go to the Jets, or he wasn't assured by Bill Parcells that he'd be the number one overall pick, and so he went back to Tennessee long before anyone had money. The one thing about Arch, though, that's interesting is, and not for me to count his wallet or whatever's in his wallet, he doesn't need the money. I mean, everyone needs the money. He should be able to make his own money, be his own person, but is he under a different calculus because he's coming from like a beyond wealthy family?
Yeah, I mean, here's but I think Brad's point is also valid. Like, because of that reason, he doesn't have to rush to the NFL. If he doesn't like the team that's sitting at the top, he could just go back to college. So it goes both ways. He's also, Arch is still, he turns 20 in April, on April 27th.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still, he would not be, you know, he definitely could stay 2 years at Texas and not be old when he gets in the NFL. So he has a lot of options.
We have, you know, we got to see Arch play a full season. But if he plays well next year and the Saints are lined up to get the number one pick, this is LeBron James getting drafted by the Cavs. Like, this is hometown guy.
Mm.
I mean, LeBron was the most hyped prospect of all time. Arch is not far behind him. LeBron is better at this, was better at that stage maybe than Arch is, but that's like an all-time great story. Local guy goes back as the number one overall pick. It's like what dreams are made of.
Why does it feel like the Mannings are a national brand? I mean, he's got ties to the Giants. Now he has ties to Texas. He probably has ties to everywhere, like Denver, where his uncle is. It doesn't feel exactly like LeBron to me. I know what you're saying. Does that feel like an all-time homecoming like LeBron? Because Arch is like, it's already such a huge thing.
And it's like another generation removed, because Archie was obviously, you know, Saints quarterback, legendary, even though they didn't win. I don't know. I wouldn't, if I'm Arch, I don't want to go to Indianapolis or Denver or the New York Giants. No way. I'm going to be really in the shadow of my uncles in that way.
Well, yeah, I think it's because the Saints play in the NFC South. It's going to be hard for them to get to number one. I mean, to lose out in that division, you have to be really, really bad now. So we'll see.
Got
to
commit.
I'm not sure. Yeah, the Saints don't feel like the number one pick to me next year. I kind of like what they got going there. I think they got 5 wins on.
Who's coaching the team?
I don't know.
Oh, 5 wins. Yeah. I'm sure they're thrilled with that. Okay, I teased it. A stat. Perloff wants to know, how did Notre Dame win this game? It's a great question. They won 27-24 regulation on a 41-yard field goal. But I'll tell you why they won the game. And it comes down to one number. 11 for 17 on third down. Meanwhile, Penn State was 3 for 11. That's the difference to me. The sustained drives, it wasn't anything super fancy. It was exactly what they usually do, which is Riley Leonard running. It was, you know, Jeremiah Love being gritty. It was short passes until the 54-yard touchdown that was just basically broken. Like the defender slipped.
Okay.
11 for 17 on third down.
I hear what you're saying, but wasn't it all like third and inches? Like when, if it was a real third down where Riley Leonard had to drop back and pass the ball, like I don't remember him hitting any of those. Like the third and nines, he had no chance.
Right. But you want to give like a lot of the credit here, you know, to Notre Dame. Like it was, they were setting themselves up for third and manageable.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So it's sort of a game plan. Like they were not, but yes, but. Actually, I'm going to credit this to Amy Lawrence, who hosted overnight right before us. She's like, the game changed when Notre Dame realized that they had to pass the ball. Like, they didn't want to pass the ball. They wanted to come out and run it every time, but Penn State had most of the team in the box. So I think, I don't think it was like, oh, let's get, you know, once they had to mix up their offense a little bit because it was too slow in the first half. Will you agree with that? So I think, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, but I don't think like they were pounding, like I don't know if that was the key. I because again, what were their numbers when it was anything more than 3 yards on third down? Probably not good. Because I don't seem to remember Riley Leonard hitting any passes last night, except for the one to
Greenhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, he had seven.
Not Greenhouse.
Oh, sorry.
Not Goodhouse.
Greathouse. I'm sorry. I keep wanting to call him Greenhouse. I don't know why.
I keep wanting to call him Jalen Greathouse, and I think it's
Jaden.
Yes. But and by the way, and the reason we don't know his name that much, he's like,
this was a career day.
Yeah, like who thought that guy was going to dominate the game?
I know. 7 receptions, 105 yards, touchdown.
The one that he made that he jumped up was incredible,
too. It really was. Okay, so we're dissecting what happened last night, which is Notre Dame moves on to the national championship. Penn State goes home. Andrew Bogish is here with the rest.
Guys, good morning. Headlines are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at ProgressiveCommercial.com. So thankfully, Pearl isn't really a Penn State fan, so none of us are truly suffering this morning. Maybe just a lost bet. What?
I decided that last night after the game.
Oh, after the game? But you're fine, though. My point is, remains that we are free, all five of us are free of personal pain from this last
night.
Yeah.
Well.
What?
You know. Except for Manny, who's...
Are you a Penn State fan?
Just basically leaking over there. I'm surprised Manny actually came in today, and I credit you for that.
I genuinely thought about not coming.
You have to come in, and this is a show rule. Your team loses, you got to come in.
Got to show up.
We need your tears.
Oh, I'm sorry, Manny. I didn't realize that this would hurt so much. The Nittany Lions scoring the first 10 points of their CFP semifinal with Notre Dame at the Orange Bowl last night. Then they retook a 24-17 lead on Nicholas Singleton's third rushing TD of the game. But the Irish got even again. Drew Aller made that terrible decision. And Mitch Jeter nailed a 41-yarder for a 27-24 Notre Dame win. Another loss to elite competition for James Franklin.
I love every guy in that locker room. I love every person in that locker room. Proud of them. Played our tails off tonight. Obviously, we made too many mistakes that were costly. So give Notre Dame credit, and we'll learn from this, and we'll be better.
Can I ask when? Particularly they'll be better in these situations. Aller's interception with 33 seconds left, the last mistake of last night. Notre Dame now plays for its first national title since 1988. That sounds perfect to transfer QB Riley Leonard.
Throughout this whole offseason, everybody would ask me like why I came to Notre Dame. And I'll give a lot of different answers, but the truth is I came here to win a national championship and, you know, to go to the best team that would give me the best odds to do that. And, obviously this is the right place and I made the right decision. So, I mean, that's why I came here at the end of the day.
Leonard accounting for 257 yards of offense last night with two touchdowns. Your other semifinal tonight in Dallas between Ohio State and Texas. Away from all of that, Georgia QB Carson Beck apparently entering the transfer portal instead of the NFL draft, and maybe he's gonna end up at the U.
Wait,
is that
is that good, EJ? I thought you're I have to be honest, I think you're a longstanding critic of Carson Beck.
Well, this is NFL Carson Beck.
Okay.
College Carson Beck in Shannon Dawson's offense and Mike Bobo's 1995 offense. Yeah, he's got to be healthy, though. That's the only thing for me.
Really? I feel like he makes terrible mistakes at times.
I mean, I think that you guys underrate how great an offensive coordinator Shannon Dawson is. He's legit one of the best in college football, and it's an entirely different offense than what Georgia's doing. Georgia's trying to run something pro style. This is spread, get the ball out fast. I think this is a much better fit for him.
And this is a great move for him. I mean, his stock is not high coming off this season where he went through a stretch where it was just turnover after turnover. And I know that Georgia had more drops than any wide receiver core in the nation, but his stock was totally down, and he's hurt. I didn't realize he was dating the basketball player from Miami.
Yeah.
Hannah Cavender.
Cavender, yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Is that part of the recruiting?
That has been mentioned.
It's a long con.
It's been mentioned as one of the reasons why he may be coming to Miami.
She started dating him just on the off chance that maybe he'd do one more year in college.
She's a plant.
She was going to say, get kicked back from Mario Cristobal.
The criticism of Carson Beck, and this is totally mean, it's character more than talent. Like, everyone wonders about that guy.
That's what I worry about, too.
Yeah.
Like, because to me, I live and die Miami football, and what doesn't get talked about enough by Cam Ward is how much he just changed the locker room and changed the locker room. The guy came in and just took over in a way that Miami hasn't seen in maybe 25 years. Carson Beck is not that guy.
Right,
so
right.
So Miami better find somebody else to be a locker room leader.
Right. I meant football character, by the way. Nothing like off.
Yeah, exactly.
Off, like, yeah, and I think it's the way his face looks. I'm going to be totally honest.
We're
like,
back on that?
I mean, yes, his face drafting is a thing. We know that. Our good friend John Wertheim, who's a genius, his sports writer, did he write a book on face drafting?
He definitely wrote an article for SI about
it. Like face drafting, and everybody, you know, you just look at the internet. Everyone's like, oh, sad Carson Beck. I'm going with a young, attractive guy.
I think that, and also, it's like a little droopy down face.
Did you see him sit back because his own voice proved his point? Like, usually you do that when somebody plays, like, a scientist or a historian. Like, I told you. You last can't do it to your own clip.
Yeah.
I don't think the science community, well, they did kind of weigh in on the face drafting.
We're going to read that article. We're going to read that article on air. People follow good-looking people with facial symmetry. Like, and Cam Newton's so darn handsome. You're not going to follow that guy on the field? Like, it works. Face drafting. Think about it. That's why I wasn't a quarterback.
Yeah, that's it. If only a little more symmetry, you could have been a contender.
Imagine, like, Perloff being, like, a quarterback coach like his friend Quincy and just, like, he'd bring in a guy, comes in, like, hey, I want to work with you. He's like, I'm sorry. I don't think I have anything to work with here.
Quincy will tell you. Quincy, you can eye a guy. He doesn't even have to throw a ball. He'll tell you who's the quarterback. He's like, he can just watch a guy walk for 5 seconds like, that ain't a quarterback.
It's just funny. If Perloff was a quarterback, like, guru, one of these coaches, like, all right, first things first, we got to take you shopping. Second thing, new haircut.
Glow up.
Third, you need a facial. You need, all the Botox, whatever. And then we'll get to the
football. Like, hey, I know you're trying to work on your deep ball, but have you considered plastic surgery?
Can we get you some Invisalign?
I would be an amazing backup quarterback. Can I just say that right now? I mean, as long as I didn't have to get into the game, I would be an all-time clipboard holder.
Well, we can tell because these are all your friends. Like, you are trying almost like living vicariously through some of your friends who are backup quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
Relationships that you made. Deep friendships, but
I'm thrilled to see
you. Just want
to
be them.
I am going to enjoy Will Howard tonight as he gets ready to hold a clipboard in the NFL. I don't even know.
Quinn Ewers?
I think he starts, actually. As Riley Leonard, I don't even know if he's good enough to hold a clipboard anymore. He is not playing well, but that's besides the point. I would be friends with him. And you're right. I think I should offer my consulting services to these draft prospects. I mean, I don't think Cam Ward and Shador Sanders want to hear from me.
No.
Shador seems to have a sense of style.
You think?
When he's driving his fancy car and all his, like, Beats by Dre for $1 million.
Yeah, him holding up a watch became, like, the thing that all athletes
Shador
do.
Shador doesn't need my help.
But you should try to give it.
Yeah. No.
Absolutely.
That would be a bit.
No, tonight's quarterbacks.
A glow down?
I told Quinn Ewers, I'm like, cut the hair, dude. Like, the mullet ain't working.
Yes, you told him.
I mean, honestly, like, Quinn Ewers' entire status changed when he cut his hair. Like, you guys laugh. This is all real stuff. What do you,
NFL the worst, team? He beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa with the mullet.
Yeah, but everyone took him more seriously when he cut his hair.
We'll see how he does tonight.
Let's jump to the NFL quickly. Tomorrow we've got the Ravens and Steelers in Baltimore. Ravens wideout Zay Flowers will not play because of the knee issue he suffered last weekend. Lions D coordinator Aaron Glenn has virtual interviews today with the Saints and Raiders after talking to the Jets about their head coaching vacancy yesterday. And the NFL has moved Monday night's Rams-Vikings wildcard game to Glendale, Arizona because of the wildfires in the L.A. area. There they were again last night, the Cleveland Cavaliers being unentertaining.
Garland matched up against Scotty Barnes. Garland, right side, steps back, three. Good! Wow! D.G. with a mammoth three! Cavaliers up five!
Keep him away from the finals. Tim Alcorn, Cavs Radio. Darius Garland, 40 points as Cleveland fought off Toronto 132-126. The night after their showdown with the Thunder, Cleveland has now won 12 in a row. And the Toronto Blue Jays avoid arbitration with Vlad Guerrero Jr. He'll make $28.5 million for the coming season. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, thanks so much. Coming up, we have more on the college football playoff semifinal from last night. We've got a lot from tonight. And a surprise headline came across yesterday, a surprise move. I don't think any of us saw this one coming, so we'll dive into that as well. Don't move. It's M&P.
All right. It's football season, and Uber Eats has the best deals on game day food, no matter what you're craving. Uber Eats, official on-demand delivery partner of the NFL. Order now. Probably the funniest commercials on game week. Jerry, what you eating? Is that Uber Eats? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Rice.
Jerry's eating rice.
And then there's one where a guy goes, I love this other commercial too, where a guy goes, oh, like, look at the names. CJ Ham, like an obscure fullback that only like real NFL fans know. I was like, that's the name you got. I laughed pretty hard. I was trying to see if anybody noticed. There was a million ads last night, but they had this new how it's hard to execute things. And there's basically Tim Tebow's trying to throw his keys.
Yes,
to,
I saw that.
But there was one where DeMarcus Ware is trying to get the little bag that you put the vegetables in at the grocery store in, and he can't open up. I related so much to that. I'm like, and I love DeMarcus Ware. He seems like, I've never met him, but he seems like the coolest guy. I love that ad. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, the produce things at the grocery store, those little plastic bags. You gotta roll them.
Yeah, I know.
So hard.
The ad was like how it's hard to do the little things in life, and he just totally nailed it.
Well, when Tim Tebow in the commercial throws his keys to the valet and it hits the back of someone else's window and shatters the glass, it's pretty funny, especially considering Tebow's pro career.
Good ad. Anyway, so I don't know how we got into that. What's he eating? Rice.
All right.
Meanwhile, McConaughey hasn't done a movie in a while.
But he's too busy. Like, he's got, are you kidding me? He's got a team to follow. Yeah. He's busy tonight. He's going to be on the sideline, probably calling a play or two.
We're going to get so much McConaughey.
Oh, are you ready for McConaughey tonight? It's going to be, and if they win, forget it. He's going to be the official ambassador of the national title game.
Born ready. Okay. Enough about me. Let's get to the surprise headline from yesterday, which was the Raiders firing Tom Telesco, their general manager. I'm trying to get a research team on it here because I tried to find this. When has a general manager been fired only a year into their tenure? Outside of like some big scandal, and that doesn't appear to be happening with Telesco. The Raiders hired him last year right off of his long run with the Chargers, and he's out. Perloff, I don't know how you read this any other way except for Tom Brady and maybe Richard Seymour, according to our pal Amy Trask, former Raiders CEO, that they are met with Mark Davis. At least this was one of the articles I read in The Athletic. Mark Davis had no plans on firing Tom Telesco, but as they talked about it more with Brady and Seymour, it became more apparent that they were just going to completely clean house. You and I have a major bet riding on this, about whether or not Tom Brady decides to hang up broadcasting to try to run the Raiders in a more real way with a bigger commitment. I think I got more evidence that I'm going to win this bet. This feels like Tom Brady is now running the show.
That all might be true. I was actually thinking, like, it reminded me of what's going on in Jacksonville with Trent Baalke. If you have an in-place GM, you cannot get the highest end coaches because a lot of coaches might not want to be paired with that GM, whoever he is. So I thought like, oh, they're noticing that coaches are coming in and are not high on Telesco.
Yeah, but I haven't seen anyone turning down interviews with the Raiders. Like Aaron Glenn yesterday turned down an opportunity to interview with the Patriots. Just said, no, thank you. I haven't really seen that, at least publicly, with the Raiders.
Well, I mean, I think Ben Johnson's going to interview with the Jags, but everyone thinks he'll turn it down eventually because of there's a GM there. I don't know. By the way, the Raiders are a little bit behind on their coaches interview, aren't they? Have we seen the whole cycle of what they're going to do?
No, listen, this cycle's going to last now for couple of weeks.
The Jets have already interviewed like half the league. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you're right. And some of the Bears, it feels like, too. But I thought this was more evidence that Tom Brady is going to have a heavier hand in who's running the Raiders than we may have previously thought. I already thought he was going to have a lot of input on the coach and the quarterback. But now that the GM is out, I think Tom is really, again, I think he's running this show. And I think Mark Davis, the owner, is more than willing to hand the keys over to him. He's probably thrilled. He's probably relieved that someone with Brady's stature can come in and maybe give him some fresh ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue against you because we have this big bet about will Brady give up broadcasting, but I think you're right, but I do think it's at a high level. Like, again, I don't think that he's going to make the second or third or fourth round pick. He might try to, and I just don't think that's a good idea either because there are other guys who really are 100% all in. And even if Brady wasn't broadcasting, like, does he feel like he's going to be all in the same way that other executives are?
You know, that'd be up to him, right? Because he has a lot of different ways he can spend his time. I should tell you what the bet is, if you weren't listening yesterday. The bet is if Tom Brady gives up broadcasting and is doing more with the Raiders, presumably, then Perloff will have to dress up like a member of the Black Hole. And if Brady continues his broadcasting and continues this with Fox after the Super Bowl, then I will dress up as a member of the Black Hole because I think Brady is one and done in broadcasting. And I think he's going to have a fine Super Bowl. I think he's going to almost, I don't say go out on top, but it's possible that this is not looked back on as a disaster or something for Brady. Just not really a great fit.
Okay.
The broadcasting.
Yeah. I just get, all I can say is black makeup, shoulder pads. You might as well start shopping on Amazon right now because he is not going to go out a loser like Jason Witten. A couple things about Tom Telesco, by the way. It is in a unique situation because nobody thought he was coming off he got fired by the Chargers.
Yes.
Right. I don't think people were surprised when the Raiders like, oh, they settled on that guy. It wasn't a strong hire when they made him. And even you and I said like, oh, I can't believe they're keeping Telesco and they fired Antonio Pierce. It just seemed like this was never, like timing wise, a marriage. They were never going to give Telesco a chance.
So it seemed at the time that the thought process was because Antonio Pierce was a first time head coach, they wanted to pair him with a very experienced general manager. And now all of that is out the window and they're completely starting from scratch. Can I tell you another place where I think this may have diverged? Because I do think Tom Brady is involved. So what was the headline that we got earlier this week? Tom Brady had called Bill Belichick or reached out to Belichick just to gauge his interest to see if there's any chance he might leave North Carolina to have interest in the Raider job. Okay. I think that sort of tipped off the hand of what Brady thinks the Raiders need in terms of a head coach, which is someone with experience. Not a first-timer, not a Ben Johnson, not an Aaron Glenn. Maybe somebody like, I'm seeing Pete Carroll is now interviewing for that Raider job. The fact that Brady called Belichick, there's an easy explanation, which is just their history together, which was so incredible. But also the fact that Brady feels like they need someone a little bit more seasoned. And I wonder if Tom Telesco was saying the opposite. Maybe he was saying, we've got to throw everything at Ben Johnson or we have to throw everything at Aaron Glenn. And perhaps there was a disconnect there.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I don't really get what Brady would be thinking because, I mean, you got to really look at this team. Like, are they the favorite to get the number one pick next year? Like, are they I can't remember. Who's in worse shape going into next season than the Las Vegas Raiders?
I mean, you gotta let me think about it. Listen,
I mean, I think if they're not the favorite to be the number one, like they gotta start thinking about Arch. Like they should tank this season.
I know, but see, we had a caller, Brad in Alabama, called us earlier this hour asking about Arch Manning. If he could always just go back to college and make $20 million in NIL and really determine, you know, really wait this thing out.
Yeah, I mean, like the other bad teams, they're definitely going to be a quarterback needy team. They're drafting number six this year, right? So the odds are they're not going to get a rookie quarterback. Like, I don't know. I just feel like if Telesco said bring in a young guy, it makes sense because like their time frame should be let's build a champion over the next 8 years.
Yeah, I wonder if Brady's saying though, And I think this is Brady behind the scenes again saying, we need a culture. You know, that word that just gets thrown around, it's like, it's almost nauseating at this point. But you can understand where maybe Brady says, listen, you got to have someone who is the identity of the team. Who are we? What do we do? You know, Antonio Pierce tried to do that. He tried to be the tough guy and all of that. But sometimes his X's and O's stuff on the field was not backing up that tough guy mentality.
You're absolutely right.
Punting at times when you should have been going for it, stuff like that.
Tom Telesco, John Carroll College, on the same team as Josh McDaniels, Nick Caserio, London Fletcher, Chris Polian, and Greg Roman, all on that same college team.
Is that right?
It's the craziest story. Yeah, John Carroll sounds familiar because of all the Ravens guys.
But they were all on the same team?
Same team.
That's nuts. Okay.
All right.
Maggie and Perloff, we get back to Notre Dame next.